in my kitchen. Prayers are to be raining out the door.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do it well, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. How you doing this beautiful evening? Music in the air, huh? And now there's going to be a noise in your ear. I have to move my microphone. Okay, I hope that didn't hurt too much. We're talking about art and the intersection of art, food, and wine tonight on Mouthful. But before we get started, I want to tell you about a guest, someone who was on, I think in December. We did a show with Laura Schaefer of Line Dry, talking about the great thing of clotheslines. And we also had Deborah Collotti on. She is an artist, and she uses clotheslines in her work. She has a show opening, actually, tomorrow, June 2nd. It opens at the Finley Community Center in Santa Rosa. And there will be an artist reception on June 12th from 6 to 8. And a lot of her her printed handkerchiefs and clothesline art will be on display. So that is a happy coincidence with the theme of tonight's show. And if you live in Sonoma County, you probably know about First Friday Nights in downtown Santa Rosa. It's one of the many things Santa Rosa has been doing to promote itself. And now A Street, that little area, South A Street, I guess we would call it, South A near Sebastopol Avenue, they're getting involved. They're going to be part of First Friday every month and through September?
Through October.
Mm-hmm. But coming up this Friday night, June 6th, you're doing something extra special.
Yes, we're doing an event, and we're coining it Vine Art. So it's a play on fine art, but vine, with the emphasis on small wineries and restaurants, local restaurants, also small family restaurants, and then the galleries and studios on A Street. And we're combining, and so that when the visitors come, they can try food, try wine, and buy art. And that's coming this Friday.
And I should tell you, that's Jennifer Hirschfield that you are hearing from, also in the studio with us, returning to Mouthful for at least a second visit, one of my favorite artists, Mary Linnea Vaughn.
Thank you, Michelle.
And I have to say, you just went to really heroic efforts to be here. What time was it that you left Nebraska?
Well, I should say I have great roots in Nebraska. I'm a Midwestern girl, but I went out, you know, artists have different shows throughout the year. I had one out in Nebraska and went out there to paint for 4 weeks. And you're right, I left at noon yesterday and arrived a half hour ago just to be on your show. And I look wonderful. Don't I look good, Michelle?
You look fabulous.
I thought so, yeah.
I would never guess you'd been driving for that many hours.
I just have a little twitch.
Now, what studio are you part of?
Well, Jen and I are actually studio mates along with Barbara Elliott. We were first known as Studio 300 on A Street. We are now Gallery 300 as well, and have a wonderful little small room gallery in the back of our studio. But Jen and I have been together with Barbara 3 years on A Street now, and it's quite a block. There's a story behind it. I can't believe that it has grown as much as it has in the last 3 years, which brings us to this evening and this event that we have an incredible event every winter called Winter Blast that happens in November. We sort of by the seat of our pants throw that together, open our studios, and sort of every studio does what they want to in terms of music and food. But this one's a little different because it's in the spring. And a friend of mine is a small winemaker, and we were walking our dogs together one night, and we said, wow, wouldn't it be great to turn our studios into tasting rooms? And he said, yeah. And then he said, well, we can even invite, small restaurants as well. So that's what sort of come together. There are many of these kinds of events in Sonoma County, but what makes this very special is that all of the block will be open, all of the studios will be open, and small winemakers and restaurants will be catering with us. It's going to be fun.
It sounds like a blast. It sounds like a cool street party.
That's exactly
and street parties should always have art involved, I think.
Yeah, and they shouldn't be overly organized, huh?
No. Uh-uh. No, definitely not. No, they should just be kind of friendly, engaging, but not overly orchestrated.
Right, and emphasis on aesthetic.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And speaking of aesthetic, so Jennifer, why don't you tell us about your art?
I consider myself an abstract environmental painter. And so I'll take an image, for instance, if I'm inspired by ocean, which is a lot of the time. It may start out looking, pretty close to looking like an ocean view, but then I kind of let it sit for a while, and I go over with layers and layers of different acrylic paint. And so it can look maybe like a horizon, but you're not quite, it's very much an abstraction. It becomes like how I feel about the water versus maybe somebody's first impression of the water, for example.
Mm-hmm. It's not, I say, it seems like polar opposite of photorealism.
Exactly.
Yeah. And looking at it, because we're looking at it online now, and we should tell people, it's Jennifer Beck, is that BEC?
Correct.
So jennifer.beck.com if you want to follow along as we're talking about it. It resonates a little bit, it exists in the same sort of territory as Mary's work for me. I love Mary's work. I'm seeing yours for the first time. I think, oh, yes, abstract landscapes. Mm-hmm. You're not painting a horse in a field. You're painting something really engaging that you can't necessarily identify as a thing.
Right. And, years ago when I studied under some abstract expressionists, I kind of took my version of it because I am very, very inspired by nature. So a lot of the early kind of abstract expressionists had the figure, but it's definitely the environment that moves me. And Mary and I have noticed that not necessarily our style is similar. Sometimes we'll put two paintings up, and we see the palette mm-hmm. being very similar.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, well, I don't know if we're going to do this or not. We may have a show in San Miguel, Mexico. And the gallery owner noted that she thought, when she looked at the two of our work, she thought, well, I look at something very vast mm-hmm. and kind of bring it to a canvas,
mm-hmm.
and Mary will take something minuscule and then, bring it into a canvas.
Oh,
so
interesting.
The polarness of that mm-hmm. is, it's clear in some of the images. Uh-huh. And
mm-hmm. And what medium do you work in?
And I am acrylic painter,
acrylic.
So it's acrylic layers and layers and layers. Uh-huh.
I'll just add, too, one of the beautiful things about the A Street block and a community of artists, which doesn't always occur, even in art school and places that I've studied or worked, it's not often that you find a group of artists working that also sort of have a similar aesthetic or a little bit more contemporary aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just feel so fortunate to be surrounded by not only Jen in my own, studio, and, of course, Barbara Elliott, whose work, I always call it heretical or out there on the edge.
Yeah, heretical is a great way to describe.
Yeah. But
I love Barbara's work.
Oh, Barbara's just an incredible thinker and hilarious person, too. But what's great is that influence of two kind of offbeat painter and a little bit offbeat photographer is really feeding sort of a different approach to painting. And then, of course, the A Street studios as well, most of them are contemporary painters and artists as well. So it's really kind of an extraordinary thing. I'm for all kinds of art, but it is wonderful to be able to walk down the block and talk to Don Bishop about, his paintings, which appear to be landscapes. There's a lot more in them. And then, just to have that right there, and then 5 minutes away, you can sit and talk about work or address an idea that you're struggling with or just want to talk about.
Now, do you find that, so do you do all your work there?
I do. Mm-hmm.
And how about you, Mary? Do you do most of your work there?
I do. Once in a while I'll go out, do some studies, uh-huh. and come in, but absolutely, yeah, mm-hmm. that's my working
and
space.
You don't find it distracting to be
We
around?
Have a big building, so I'm really, Jen's towards the back of the building, I'm in the center, and Barbara's up front, so there's plenty of room to be isolated as well as to know they're in the building. Yeah.
And the upside with some of this new energy on the neighborhood is that now there's this girl glyph gallery, which is Monica Jacobson and Nancy Bellin, and it's lovely because we know them, but there is we do play with that.
They're
we have to
same,
say
they're right behind us in the same building. It's like a tunnel building. It just
right.
keeps going back. So that's a new gallery right behind us as well. And then the yoga studio, the yoga center, just moved in last month. Donna Birch's yoga center is there, and she has just restored it beautifully into a gallery setting. So there'll be paintings hanging there on Friday night as well. So lots of very exciting things are happening down there. Every time we turn around, somebody else is moving in.
And it is a line to walk. You know, the whole piece about the social piece and uh-huh. then doing your right. Absolutely. You hit it right on. Yeah. And we do walk that.
Yeah. I would think because, I'm a writer. And could
there
I?
You go.
How do people at magazines and newspapers work with all these other people around
yeah.
them? I'm so used to isolation. And I wonder. But I can see how you can also get energy from that.
Yeah. So it's a fine line.
Yeah.
It's a fine line.
How did that whole A Street, South A Street area get? How did this art revival get started there, Mary? Do you?
Well, there's quite a bit of history to it, and really Andrea Hibbard should probably be sitting here talking about that. And she has some great stories to tell, but I think she started, those studios have been there 6, 7, 8 years.
And she's the one that, it was A Street Gallery.
A Street Gallery.
And now it's, what, C in Heaven?
It's C in Heaven with Barbara Harris is the curator there. The Becoming Independent Group has a gallery, and that's their official gallery, and they've named it Sea in Heaven. So, again, you've got some really interesting drawings and paintings happening that are very fresh, very authentic, coming from just an out-there, genuine response, So that's we're excited to have them there as well. Laura Hoffman has a studio facing A Street, another sort of contemporary painter. Mario Uribe down the back street gallery. You go down an alleyway, and he's got a building full of artists as well. He's a contemporary painter that does Zen circles. And then the Tibidabo Stender Photography is facing forward as well. So those are just a few of the studio venues, but we've got lots of recycled. We've got Skirt Chaser down in the corner. She's got vintage clothing.
Skirt Chaser
Seed
is a great vintage store.
Seed just moved in where St. Rose Cafe used to be.
Now has Seed opened?
They have, haven't they?
They have, yeah. It's very good vegan.
Vegan raw, food. Isn't it?
Yeah, vegan raw. And a very good Caesar salad and delicious pesto. Very happy. And they'll be open for Vine Art event.
Uh-huh.
They will be serving tastings. So everyone should know that. You come, you can get a wine glass and try 5 different wines with that one wine glass.
And
or
you walk
just eat. Just go there and eat.
Do you get to walk around outside with your wine glass?
That's a good point. Well,
because that's just such a thrill in California.
First, you got to dump the wine, and then you can walk around.
Okay, so you can only have the wine inside.
We have bouncers at every door, okay?
Yeah, you have
and
to.
So
you have to.
And they're going to be watching you, Michelle, most of the evening. No, the goal is we even have a wine glass with our logo on it.
Yeah,
and for
$5,
you buy that glass and then go from venue to venue.
Cool. We'll be right back with more talk about what's coming up at South A Street on Friday night.
Face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. This Colonel Sanders job is getting me down. A crazy chicken chasing me all over town. Psycho chicken. Better run away.
It's Mouthful, coming up on Friday night, June 6th. In a way, especially this postcard, it looks very New York. You know, it looks like the sort of thing on a summer night, and you go to an area where there's a bunch of galleries and there's really smart people all dressed in black, you know, going from gallery to gallery. It looks like you have some luminaria on the street lighting things up, which is really cool. So there's going to be wine. It looks like you've got at least five wineries, including, oh, I see Carol Shelton had some of her rosé last night at the closing party. Kind of sad closing party of Seaweed Cafe. It was a great, wow. It was a great party, a great party, but it also means a great place is over. And, so Carol Shelton, Eric Kent, Watkins family, and a couple of others that we will tell you about. Tell us about the food.
Well, when we originally came up with this idea, we quickly thought of some of our favorite restaurants and ones that were owned by families. And one of the first ones I thought of was Pam Posh, which is a lovely, lovely, I think it's considered a northern Indian restaurant over at Mission Plaza. And so that's Indian food, which is delicious, wonderful, gourmet. So that'll be in Gallery 300. And the only other one I can really talk about right now, too, that I know very well is the Riviera, which was a lovely, lovely restaurant. And Rita is one of the owners, and she lived in Rome most of her life. And here she is, you know, doing the real deal.
And isn't that where Fabiani's used to be?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I've been wanting to. I've heard some really good things about Riviera, really good seafood.
Yeah, lovely, lovely food. And so every one of the restaurants has some tie to one of the artists in the neighborhood, which is lovely. We have these relationships, and we want to support them as they want to support us in this very, very cool event that's going to come up. And it was inspired. We have a card that's being circulated around town, and the look of it is somewhat of like a Soho look. And that was our goal, really, to have an arts district in this town that was reminiscent of some of these well-known, world-renowned art districts.
Well, we happen to be lucky that Alejandro Salazar, too, is another artist down on A Street. You don't really see him much, but he's up above in Mario Uribe's studio, and he's really responsible for the card, and he just does an incredibly sophisticated design style it's got. So we feel really lucky that that Alex did that for us. And the photograph on the card is actually a shot of our Winter Blast event, which is in November, and it had such a wonderful aura to it. We just thought it looked like right out of San Francisco or something.
It's a great shot with that dog in the foreground.
Yeah.
I do have to say, one of the other people involved in the food is Ruthie's Real Meals. Mm-hmm. Ruth Lefkowitz. She's a volunteer here at KRCB for a long time.
Wow.
And she's started a home delivery meal mm-hmm. service.
Wow.
And so I see that she's involved, and that's great. She seems to be going along really well, using almost all local ingredients from the mm-hmm. farmer's market and that sort of thing.
Bob and Becky Stender on A Street have used Ruthie's meals, and I've had a few of them, and they're just absolutely delicious. They're great. They're very gourmet.
It's great to see Ruthie doing this and doing so well with it. I know it's a real labor of love for her. So what time does it start? Wait, I can answer that question. It starts at 5 o'clock.
Right, and it's, as we said, it's in conjunction with First Fridays in Santa Rosa. I want to quickly say that we feel very fortunate that the First Friday Art Walk asked us to join in on their event, because it just helps everybody, and they even send Rosie the trolley over. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
So
if you're down
excellent.
On 4th Street, you can easily jump on the trolley.
So you don't have to drive.
Exactly.
Perfect.
Right. So you can do the whole kit and caboodle. We will, however, be open an hour later. First Fridays are 5 to 8, and we'll be open until 9 o'clock. We're going to run it just a little bit longer.
You going to have any music?
That's really up to each. I want to just also add also that one of the great things about A Street is we, as much as we try to be very organized and down to the little detail, we also like to keep very casual. And so each studio and gallery, some of them will have music, some of them won't. They might ask them the night before. I know that there's often a guitar player and accordion player that roams during Winter Blast. And so I will say yes, there will be music. And it will just be spur of the moment.
And that's the best kind.
Yeah.
It's like spontaneous outbreaks of music.
Well, Jesse Wickman Studios is right near the gallery, and he has a recording studio as well as drumming and drumming lessons. Mm-hmm. And he usually brings a venue in, sometimes, again, last minute mm-hmm. to perform. So he will be there that night as well. Mm-hmm. And this is underwritten, by the way. This was a grant that we helped kind of support us do the card mm-hmm. and as well as the glasses. And it's at the Arts District, the Downtown Arts District. Mm-hmm. has been involved in supporting us for the last about 6 months. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. they're just getting us hooked in and giving mm-hmm. us some funds, and we're really appreciative of them.
Absolutely.
That's great. That's great to see downtown associations, you know, caring about more than bringing Starbucks or something, you know, into town to support local artists, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That's really a good way to go. So, Mary, you just were in Nebraska. Mm-hmm. You were painting for 4 weeks. Do you want to talk about what you're working? And we should talk first a little bit about your work in general. I know you best by your abstract landscapes, mm-hmm. your mm-hmm. use of color, and your sort of use of realistic images mm-hmm. Juxtaposed against abstract images. I love it. You know I love your art. I'm one of your biggest fans.
Thank you, Michelle. I was lucky to go to the Maine College of Art and have this incredible mentor who talked with me a lot about metaphor and subtlety and innuendo in terms of painting. And I do. I use food images, I use vegetables, but really I use organic objects that are connected to nature. Because they are connected to nature, therefore they are connected to us. And because they're connected to us, there's all this personification that can occur through an object. So that's really what I'm after. I really try to put forward an idea. You know, a painting has to have an idea for me behind it as well. And, you know, as you paint each year, you hopefully grow and develop. And so I hope my paintings have a luscious quality to them. That's certainly what I'm striving for. But also, I hope that there's a little message in them, a little bit of meaning behind them as well. So you might see a floating mango coming across one of my landscapes. Recently, though, I thought of you because I did a garlic bulb, and I was so caught up in it being laid down upon this very painterly surface, it started to look like, Michelle, are you ready for this? I thought of you. Started reacting a bit like it was hovering. It became sort of a UFO. And instead of being very serious, it became very funny. So, you know, there can be a comical element. There can be a very profound sort of sensual quality to it. It just all depends. You know, the paintings happen. But anyway.
That really reminds me. Do you know John Harris, Lloyd John Harris, in the Book of Garlic?
Oh,
He did that book in, I think, 1974. And he was an art major.
Mm-hmm.
And his mother, he's a good Jewish boy, and his mama had a great love of garlic. And he did this book, and it really set the tone for the garlic revolution that was to come. Mm-hmm. And he got involved with Gilroy. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. much of the book, the last probably, good third of the book, is his art. And it's garlic in all these different situations. Mm-hmm. Garlic on the top of Roman columns, and garlic on a snake's body, and mm-hmm. in, you know, phallic shapes. Mm-hmm. I mean, just mm-hmm. outrageous. And most of it, this was pre-computer art.
Yeah.
So a lot of it is cut and paste. And I'm nearly certain there were garlics as UFOs, garlic heads as UFOs.
Well,
I can turn right to the page.
It's floating across a composition, but it's you know, a piece of garlic is very bulbous. You know, it can be it's like tulips are.
Yeah.
You know.
Yes.
So there's this sort of organic, very beautiful sort of shape to it as well. And as I split it apart, it wanted to fly instead of land. So I'll have to show you that painting.
Oh,
you'll get a chuckle out of it.
I would love to see it.
Michelle.
You've done a lot with tomatoes.
I'm on chapter 4 now. That was chapter 1, Michelle. Where
oh, that was
been?
Chapter 1?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Now, I thought grapefruit was chapter 1.
Well, tomatoes are actually called love apples. I don't know if you know that.
I do.
And, you know, the French word for apple is le pomme, you know. And then if you look in, I did a lot of gender studies at the Maine College of Art, too. And there's a wonderful French photograph of a very sensuous woman in a black and white photograph standing there holding a tray of le pomme and their love apples, and then there's a tomato on the tray too. And it's just, I don't know what it was about that photograph, but it absolutely I loved it because it reminded me that this was not a it was about woman, that, you know, the palm, the tomato had a lot more in it than just what it was. It is so much about us. This very
one big tomato.
Yeah, but I haven't painted a tomato in a while. I haven't painted that in a while. I've actually been painting what I feel are little microcosms and what I call naturettes. I've been painting naturettes lately.
Can you describe a naturette?
Well, you know, the hum, the buzz, the all the things that we travel by very quickly, I want people to remember are very important. So I'm getting sort of caught up in dragonfly wings and the jeweled pools that we sometimes quickly go
now,
by.
Are they small paintings?
A lot of... The ETTE to
yes.
mini, the small, the yeah. naturette. Yes, it can be a small subject or it can be a small painting. And I am painting a lot of small works right now, and I'm not exactly sure why, but I guess I'm centering in on that. I want to focus, I guess, more than usual.
You're listening to Mouthful here on KRCB.
Support for Mouthful comes from KRCB members and from Ibis Builders, offering mindful living in sustainably built residential lofts with their own professional first-floor office space. Located in downtown Sebastopol, Florence Lofts online at florencelofts.com.
You're listening to Mouthful on KRCB. It's Michelle Jordan. A couple of other things coming up. The James Beard Awards take place this coming weekend. I believe they're Friday night and Sunday night, both nights. On Friday night, we'll find out who wins in the broadcast journalism category. Three radio shows nominated. Mouthful, happy to be among them for the fourth time. If this were a horse race, I would probably put my money on the Kitchen Sisters because the episode that is nominated has Willie Nelson hosting, and it really seems to be Willie Nelson's year. He is on, just seems to be on every radio, TV, website. He seems to be everywhere, and I think Willie Nelson really deserves it. He's really cool. So that's where my money is. And it's like really cool to see Mouthful's name like next to Willie Nelson. That's enough of an accomplishment for this little radio show. Lots of other stuff going on Friday night. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, it's a big weekend. You can always tune in to A Mouthful, the column, which comes out in the Time Out section of the Press Democrat on Thursdays. I try to do a roundup of not necessarily the most obvious events, but the ones that I find particularly intriguing and, as much as possible, ones that I hope you don't read about anywhere else. So try to go through the back alleys and nooks and crannies of the North Bay and sometimes even into the Bay Area looking for things to entice you, usually having something to do with food and wine and, you know, everything's about food and wine in a way because we all eat and drink every day. So the event coming up, Vine Art, A Taste of South A Street, taking place Friday, June 6th, 5 to 9 p.m. And it really is a remarkable thing. This almost couldn't have happened before now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's great to see an area this focused on our art, and not just galleries, but on working artists. What is the goal that y'all have for this event, or the results of this event?
You know, what's kind of happened, Michelle, over time, too, is as more and more people move in there. In January of this year, we decided we needed to sort of get a little more together and give ourselves a name so that we could apply for grants to help us out a little bit with postcards, promotion, that kind of things. And we certainly put a lot of that out of our own pockets towards events. But the city has just been great to include us in the art walks and then to help us with these grants. But we are now officially called SAAA, which stands for South A Arts Alliance. And we don't really have a leader, but we have this. We get together once a month, and I know Jen and myself and Becky Stender and Laura Hoffman and many people come, and that's who we officially are now. So if you start to see SAAA, which stands for South A Arts Alliance, that's who we are down on A Street making some of these events happen.
And the blog, can I add the blog? The blog
sure.
is South A Arts .blogspot.com. And so we keep that updated, you know, like for instance this event, or if any one of us is showing in galleries outside of Santa Rosa or even within Santa Rosa, we make sure that that's listed. Oftentimes get pictures. Some people were at the Sebastopol Center of the Arts or any local galleries, and then we make sure that that is put up on the blog. So it can keep you current on what's going on in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Now, we all know that the economy isn't, you know, going gangbusters and gas is $1 million a gallon. How are people buying art?
They are. And I think one of the pieces that, you know, if you're going to buy art anyways, you're going to feel like that's something that's important to you. I had somebody come in not so long ago, and she has a house, I guess, in Sebastopol. And I don't think she has a couch yet or a table, but she bought two pieces of original art for me. So in a way,
how cool.
She felt for her,
uh-huh.
That's what her friends are saying, "What you need a couch. Where do you sit?"
Art's more important
yeah,
than a couch.
That's what she felt. So I think it kind of is this priority piece. And of course, if you need food and such, you're going to go for that first. Mm-hmm. But I mean, personally, I don't see a big change because of the economy, actually, at all.
Well, you know, that's a tough topic, but I for one, I mean, I probably shouldn't even open this can of worms up, but I never think about that. I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in is making art, and it's sort of like the old phrase, you know, build it and they'll come. You know,
and do they?
Well, they do, and, mm-hmm. you know, I never intend to sell anything. I don't even try to. I just make my art like a lot of us down there. People come, and one thing or another will occur. In fact, nothing occurs unless you're making your art first. So
sure.
that's kind of certainly my approach, and I'll just speak, you know, that's
but
how I feel.
I think a lot of people do wonder, does that mean that you also have a day job, or does it mean you just jump off the bridge without a parachute?
Oh, gosh, we could have a whole show just on this topic, but I don't. I actually work with the Art Start program in the summer with Mario Uribe. We help coordinate that young artist program. Mm-hmm. We do the benches and murals. So that does help me supplement my income mm-hmm. a couple of months during the year. But no, I jumped off 7 years ago to come to Sonoma County to do that first, and somehow I've survived. It's not easy, and I don't recommend it unless that's what you want to do when you wake up in the morning every day.
Yeah. I think that's a really good thing for people to hear. I think there are people who spend their lives with artistic inclinations mm-hmm. that they don't ever allow to blossom. So to hear somebody mm-hmm. say what you just said, and it's the reason I asked you, is mm-hmm. I think it's really important for people to know, number one, you just have to love doing it and want to do it. You don't have to have a business proposal.
Yeah.
You don't have to have a patron.
Yeah.
You make your art, and if you have that passion...
I sort of giggle about it, too, because, you know, Gloria Stein said to Picasso, or I wish that on no one. In other words, that drive that an artist has to wake up every day, mm-hmm. it's almost like you're either born with it or not. And I don't mean to be that profound about it, but it's really true. I wouldn't recommend it to anyone that doesn't want to wake up every day and just work at it, because things happen, and they will come if you build it. It's really true. I've survived in Sonoma County just on my paintings. It just blows my mind that I have. But mm-hmm. it's because I put the painting first, probably.
Oh, yeah. Highly likely. Mm-hmm. Now, you show sometimes at Rocchielli, don't you?
Well, they've been very good to me, and again, there's wine and art meeting up, and it's a family-owned winery that I love.
Just great little tasting room.
Such a
wonderful winery cats.
In fact, I started painting roses like crazy just because I showed out there. I realized that roses had more in them other than just being a rose as well. You know, they're fragile and yet tough little entities.
Yeah.
But they have a beautiful rose garden at Rocchioli. And, I show there every 2 years. Victoria Stone is a curator there, and she signs you on for every 2 years.
Oh, great. And last night when I was at Seaweed, I was walking back to my car, leaving the party, leaving some, oh my God, some great flamenco dancing and music. Had to tear myself away. It was really wonderful. And I looked there and I was like, wait, Local Colors, this gallery, that has to be Mary. And there was a Mary Vaughan painting in the window at Local Colors.
Wow, thank you for noticing. I, of course,
You have a very identifiable, you know, I can see your image. It doesn't have to be identified. I know that it's you.
Well, that is a very high form of
compliment. No, anyone who, and they should go to, people should check out your website, Mary Vaughan, V-A-U-G-H-A-N, MaryVaughan.com. You have a good website, and initially check out the abstract landscapes. Those are just the ones that I have the real deep resonance with, and they're absolutely, you could not mistake them for another artist.
Well, that's, I don't know what to say, except that's probably the greatest thing any artist wants to hear, except for I feel like I'm just getting started, and I have a long way to go yet to develop that style.
But you know, that's a good way to feel. Really good way to feel.
Painting like writing, like any great art. The more you know about it, the more there is to know.
And it's the more infinite. You realize that you don't, it's like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Why did I think I knew so much 10 years ago? You know, that
it's
sort of
true.
Thing.
I had no idea painting was as wide and big as it is. Don't you agree, Jen?
Well, as you were speaking about that earlier, I was thinking one thing about I find with this profession is that I guess something we can use in all of our every life, you know, activities is there's some piece about being conscious of taking kind of your ego out of it. Mm-hmm. Because even though, as Mary said, you build it and people come, a piece of this career is to call a gallery and say, I've got work, I want to show you, and get over there and show them your stuff. Mm-hmm. And big chunks of them are going to say no. And then you're going to get some people like, Mill Valley guy, you know, Robert Green, Fine Art, I'm going to show them this summer. You're going to get them. Mm-hmm. But the ego is important to separate, because if every time we said, look at this, and someone says, eh, and we let it go deep, forget it.
Yeah, it's so the same with any creative endeavor.
Right, yeah. So you got to get a little like, I love this. Most aren't going to like it.
Yeah.
Some are going to love it. So I'm going to, you know. It builds on it. And then you get the reinforcement
of ego
and the energy.
Is so fascinating, though, too, because I've always felt like I didn't need to be there. In other words, when someone is interested in a painting, it's really more about them. It has very little to do with me.
You can step out, yeah.
Michelle, really.
That's interesting.
You're really
just
finding a part of you there. And what's also absolutely fascinating, I like to even take the word ego out of art making, because for me, it is just the opposite. Most of the time when someone comes to my painting and sees it, I meet them, and it's as if we've known each other forever. So there are relationships that form through it, and you sort of find your kindred connections through the painting, which I didn't even know about 8 years ago. I didn't realize it was going to be about relationships and people and similar ways of thinking.
Well, that was sort of how you and I met.
Absolutely.
I remember the first time I saw two pieces in the Tomato Festival, and I went and said, who is this person? And I think both pieces were already sold.
Wow.
And I think you took first and second place that year, and I just went to the desk and said, who is this? Tell me the name of the artist. How do you spell the name? Where do I find her?
Thank you, Michelle. And
then
we
found
met,
you in the phone
and then
book.
We forgot about the paintings.
But no, your stuff partly, your stuff was like, you look at the art show, and I'm sorry that they don't still have the art show. They didn't have it last year anyway, and it's been my favorite part of the Kendall Jackson Tomato Festival, except for the 1 year I did the world's biggest BLT, and you got to love that.
Oh, I love
But there was all the work in the Tomato Festival, and then there was your painting. And it was like your painting, or your paintings, you had, I think, 3 1 year. They were luminous. They just absolutely, it was like they had this sort of shimmering aura around them, and it has nothing to do with knowing you. Didn't really know you at the time.
Thank you so much.
And they're just amazing.
Thank you so much.
So
you're
go to the website.
Me.
Well, you can't see. It's true. But it's really true. Your art is really compelling. And people who listen to Mouthful know that it's kind of unlike me to gush. You know, I really don't gush very much. And at a restaurant, as a restaurant critic, I never gushed. I didn't like anything. You know, I'm a critic. I don't have to like anything.
Well, I think you've just described yourself. I think all you're doing is just finding yourself in something visual. That's
well,
all.
That's a very flattering
you're
comment.
You're shimmering, Michelle.
Well, and how do you follow that up with a comment? Maybe we need to follow it up with a song, Lawrence.
I'll be with you in apple blossom time. I'll be with you to change your name to mine. One day in May, you'll come and say, happy is the bride.
Yes, sometimes on a Sunday night we get a little silly here on Mouthful. A veritable love fest, me and two of the artists on South A Street. You know, mostly I'm talking to people about food, about writing about food, about wine, that sort of thing. And every now and then it's great to indulge my true love of art. My house is full of mostly inexpensive art because, you know, you get what you could afford. But I think it's such an important, engaging part of life. And I think making art at any level, you know, from little kids putting their first splashes of paint to, you know, elephants holding the brush and having someone manipulate them, whatever that's about.
Ruby, the elephant.
Is that her name?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that?
Well, Ruby, the elephant. Oh, Michelle, what a topic. I think animals have souls. I'll leave it at that.
I do, too. It never occurred to me that they didn't.
There's probably something there. Ruby's done wonders for that zoo.
What zoo is she
at? I think it's in Chicago, isn't it?
I'm not sure. I've just seen little clips of it, very, very brief.
Yeah. And I'm certain that an elephant can probably see color. And that was how the experiment started. Was it all had to do with whether they could see color or not. And then Ruby picked up the brush, and before we knew it, she was making these abstract marks. But there's a little bit of promo push.
Sure.
Let's force Ruby so we can make some money, too. But I'm pretty sure elephants can see color, and there's something there. She's aware that she's doing something.
Sure.
People like.
And, you know, elephants are pretty...
Oh.
You know,
aren't they the smartest? Pretty, what's
they're
the
pretty intelligent.
Mm-hmm. The pig is smart.
Pigs are really smart. Mm-hmm. elephants, but if you start reading animal behavior studies, especially recent ones, animals are pretty smart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, humans just have the bias to see if intelligence is expressed as humans express it
with language.
Yeah,
with our language.
But if mm-hmm. you start seeing things, I'm a real fan of Harper's and the last page of Harper's Findings. Oh, God, 2 issues ago. What was it? Butterflies and moths remember their lives as caterpillars.
What was the basis?
They just go through, and it'll be a summary of worldwide scientific findings in the last several weeks.
Well, don't you remember your safest, most secure time?
That one I would have to think about. But another one in the current issue, or the one I just read last night.
I remember my cocoon. Don't you remember
I don't
yours?
Know if I've ever been in one, frankly. But people who are shown subliminal images of the Apple computer logo respond to follow-up questions more creatively than people who are shown a subliminal PC logo. I'm not making this up.
I, believe it.
Is that Steve Jobs over there?
Well, speaking of insects, my naturettes are totally flaunting and emphasizing all those wonderful little mechanical miracles that go on with all those. You know the great film Winged Migration about the
birds. I just
birds.
Watched that.
The same French filmmaker did Microcosms, you know.
Oh,
the
first I don't know about Microcosms.
With the Microcosmos, that's right.
Microcosmos?
With the white albino snails making passionate love to Bolero. Have you seen that?
No.
It's just,
oh my God.
It is a very slurpy. But
see, this is a show about food. We're talking about slurpees.
No, that film is incredible. I think there's one bit of dialogue and the rest of it's about insects. What you see from 3 inches under the grass and below is the whole film. And it just stuck with me for so long that I just am fascinated by all the little entities and molecules and structures. And that's kind of what I've been working with lately with my paintings.
Boy, I would like to take you out walking on the lava on Big Island and see what you brought to a canvas after that, both of you.
Well, interestingly enough, when I was walking my dog out on the prairie, a friend of mine said, "Do you know that life really is about a 12-inch square in front of you? That's the most important thing, is a 12-inch square in front of you at that moment." I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, a couple of things. Just deal with what's in front of you at the time. You learn a lot doing that, the present moment. And then also, if you actually did dig up a 12-by-12-inch piece of earth anywhere in the world, you would discover it is loaded. It is as big as the world itself, that little 12-by-12-inch
And I think that's a great note to end on. We have had Mary Lynne Avon and Jennifer Hirschfield. The event coming up, South A Presents Vine Art, A Taste of South A. It's coming up Friday night, June 6th from 5 to 9 p.m. $5. Get you there all night if you want to stay. Several restaurants involved, several wineries. And, you know, if you're going out that night, I think this is the place to be. And you heard it here on Mouthful. Be sure to tune in next week. We're going to be talking about Sonoma County Herb Society Herbs, the 2-day herb festival coming up. I think it's 2 days. And also the Lavender Festival coming up, both in the middle of June. So meet me back here next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. And now another of Laura Hager's Yummy Reviews.
I'm writing about the book I read. I have to sing about the book I read.
Before I review Michaela Weissman's new book, God in a Cup, The Obsessive Quest for the Perfect Coffee, I have a confession. I'm a tea drinker. Though my husband drinks coffee every morning, we do not own a grinder. And while I am not so debased as to buy commodity coffee in vacuum-packed cans, I stand flummoxed before the smorgasbord of coffee choices at my local Whole Foods. Fair trade, sustainably farmed, hand-picked, bird-friendly, Sumatran, Ethiopian, Honduran, Costa Rican, truth be told, I choose at random. Half the time, thanks to my middle-aged brain, I set the dial to fine grind, carefully position the bag, turn on the machine, and then wander off, never to return. After reading Weissman's sprightly account of the rise of the specialty coffee industry, I will never again treat coffee so lightly. God in a Cup follows the adventures of 3 globe-trotting entrepreneurs on the cutting edge of the third wave of coffee. The first wave was the industrial commodity coffee of the mid-20th century. The second wave, the quote-unquote gourmet coffee of Starbucks and Peet's. The third wave is made up of elite specialty roasters who are taking coffee connoisseurship to whole new levels, and it must be said, to whole new price points as well. One of the coveted coffees discussed in this book, a Panamanian coffee known as Hacienda La Esmeralda Especial, goes for $130 a pound. That's a pretty precious cup of joe, a cult cabernet of the coffee world. In fact, reading God in a Cup, I was struck over and over again by the similarities between coffee and wine, America's 2 great legal drugs of choice. In the coffee world, tasting is known as cupping, and until now, it was the preserve of professional coffee buyers. But now high-end roasters like New York's Cafe Grumpy, Chicago's Intelligentsia, and Portland's Stumptown have been offering cuppings for customers, too. Like wine, coffee is scored on a 50 to 100-point scale, with the most coveted coffees scoring in the 90s. And the descriptors of connoisseurs are just as ornate, with cuppers detecting notes of vanilla, honeysuckle, and mango in their coffee. In Portland, which is arguably the new coffee capital of America, some restaurants offer pairing menus matched not to different wines, but to different coffees. One of the differences between wine and coffee is that high-end wine growing has traditionally been the purview of the very wealthy, while the best coffee is often grown by the poorest of the poor in the most beautiful yet wretched places on earth. Ethiopia, where coffee first evolved, Burundi, Indonesia, and the highlands of Central America. The coffee entrepreneurs that Weissman profiles spend much of their time on bone-jarring jeep rides to high, inaccessible places most Western coffee drinkers never see. In contrast to the image of coffee capitalists squeezing poor farmers by paying the lowest price possible, the new coffee entrepreneurs are part connoisseurs, part social revolutionaries, who are actually trying to pay more for great beans. Their challenge is to coax farmers used to growing for the commodity market to grow high-end beans that fetch much more per pound. This means asking farmers to sacrifice quantity for quality. In lands where coffee growing is dictated by a mix of culture, tradition, and desperation, that's a hard sell. Weissman tells the story of both sides of the coffee equation with empathy and erudition, and reports on an international barista competition as well. All this makes for a grand yarn, but more than that, like a good cup of coffee, God in a cup will wake you up. This is Laura Hager for Mouthful.
Support for Mouthful on KRCB comes from KRCB radio members and from the Sebastopol Farmers Market, now open in the downtown Sebastopol Plaza every Sunday from 10 to 1:30 with organic, sustainable, locally produced fruits, vegetables, meats, and cheeses, plus breakfast, lunch, and local musicians. Support also comes from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the rustic Italian tradition, featuring seasonally sourced organic produce. Serving brunch Saturday and Sunday, Peter Lowell's Cafe online at peterlowells.com. Support also comes from NetBooks, complete business management software for companies up to 50 people, including wineries and food producers. Information available at netbooks.com or by phone at 86-NETBOOKS.
Listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some flip cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Dinner,